Bosai, we're on Daf Chaf Dalid Amud Aleph, and we've Baruch Hashem, we've gone through the Mishnah, and now we started going through the Gemara.
Okay.
So the Gemara on page Chaf Dalid Amud Aleph, which you'll see if you have the page, then it's about 2/3 of the way down the page, maybe about 12. Or 15 lines up from the bottom of the daf, and you'll see the big gimel mem, right? Hopefully you'll see that large gemara. And this is where we're going to analyze the Mishnah. Now, the Mishnah tells us, and that was the first statement in the Mishnah, back on Chav Gimel Amin Beis, that Arusa v'shomeres yavan lo shosos v'lo notlos ksuba. So let's just review what we know. We have someone called an arusa. She hasn't yet been married in the chuppah. She hasn't been taken under the chuppah, but she has had kesef, shtar, or bia, one of the three methods of marriage. So she is a married woman, but she doesn't have nisuin, she only has erusin. Now, what that means is, for example, that in certain cases, she doesn't have the rights of an Asua. If you ask me, does she have the status of an Eishes Ish? The answer is a robust yes. She is an Eishes Ish, which means if somebody would have a relationship with her, that adultery would be a capital crime. We'd put him to death, or she would be put to death, if all the conditions were met. And that's called an Arusa. But the Mishnah is going to say that as far as the parasha of Sota is concerned, which culminates with Shasia, that means she drinks from the Mei Merorim, she is excluded from the parasha. However, the Mishnah says even though she doesn't drink for the Mei Merorim, but she forfeits her rights to Ksuba, she'll be Asur al Baila, her husband will have to divorce her because she's not drinking for the Mei Merorim, and she cannot establish her innocence, and in this case she's guilty until proven innocent because she violated Kinui and Stira. And to the same extent that her violation of Kinui and Stira, specifically Stira, generates a loss of her heter lebaila, meaning she loses her permissibility to have any intimacy with her husband, he's going to have to divorce her, she also now forfeits her ksuba. Why? Because she had stira. She went into this secluded place and violated the kinu. That's category number one in the Mishnah. And then we have category number two, is called the Shomeres Yavam, which means that her husband died without children, and now she is waiting for Yibum from her brother-in-law. And at this point, she's almost like married to her brother-in-law, but almost doesn't count him because she's not fully married to her brother-in-law. And the Ishus, therefore, the relationship between her and the Yavam is incomplete Ishus. And if that relationship is incomplete, then once again, she's excluded from the parasha, from the law of Sota, which means that she will not drink, and therefore she cannot prove her innocence. She will not collect her ksuba. Her husband is not allowed to have relations with her. He has to divorce her, but she cannot have rights to the ksuba. And the reason for that is because of Kinui and Stira.
I thought her husband was dead.
Her husband... No. Her husband now is the Yavam. Oh, boy. I'm really guilty here. I apologize. I must have misled you. Again, what I meant to say was that her husband, in inverted commas, is the Yavam. And that's called Zika. If you remember, we tried to sort of engrave those words into your brain. That's called Zika. Zika is a relationship between her and the Yavam, which means that she's basically married to the Yavam now, the live brother. According to one opinion in the Gemara in Yavamis, if she would have a relationship with another man other than her Yavam, she's being an infidel, so to speak, an adulteress against her Yavam, the child from that relationship would be a mamzer. I mean, that's how serious we're talking about here. So this Shomeres Yavam certainly has the status of what we call an erva. and you know, she's not allowed to have any relationship whatsoever with anyone else. Now, if the Yavam suspected that she was, shall I say, if you pardon the expression, hanging around with somebody that she shouldn't be hanging around with, then he could give her what's called kinui, as you know, and he warns her not to be alone with him. And she went ahead and she violated that kinui. So at this point, she's no longer allowed to be married to the Yavam. He's going to have to give her a chalitza. And not only that, she loses, she forfeits her ksuba, and the reason for that is because she violated the kinui with a stira.
So, I'm just confused there. So a Yavam is basically an arusa to the brother?
Mm-hmm.
Or
well, he's an arus to his brother's wife. Arus. Arus is the male counterpart of an arusa.
Right.
So let's say if I go ahead and give kesef shtar to a woman, then I'm the arus and she's the arusa.
Right.
If this woman's husband died and she falls for yibum, then the yavam is like an arus. He's got a partial ishus and he's married through zika to this yavama.
Right.
And in both cases, the ishus is incomplete.
So, Rabbi, yesterday you mentioned two things I've been trying to understand. Two says, you said now that somebody's like almost married to Yeva.
It's not a complete issue.
Right. And the other thing is, yesterday you also mentioned that the Nesuim were not kasher, so it's not married. How can you have something like in between? Or it's married, or it's not married, or...
Right.
So...
So wait. Let's go over the two categories. In one case, the marriage is complete. It's a complete marriage,
right,
but it's not kosher, which means that it's against the halacha. You violate what's called chayvei lavim, if
right,
you remember this discussion. And he has to divorce her, but the ishus is absolutely complete. So that's going to be, let's say, for example, the case of an almona,
right,
the kohen gadol, the case of a grusha to a kohen hedjot,
right,
or the case of a mamzer. In all those three cases, the ishus is absolutely complete. But it's illegitimate. It's not kosher, which means he has to divorce her.
So
we're not up to that category yet.
Okay.
We're focused on another category. This is the first category in the Mishnah, where the ishus itself is incomplete. It's absolutely kosher ishus. Adarabah, he married this woman with Erisin, Kesef Shtarubia, but it's incomplete because he hasn't yet taken her into the chuppah. So he didn't clinch it to 100%. We'll call it 80% or 70%. I don't know what percentage it is. And then we have a case of Shomeres Yavam where the Zika makes her 60, 70, 80% married to the Yavam, not 100%. And in those cases, there's no option of Shisia. Shisia meaning drinking from the May Mararim. That's not an option. Now, take a look again at the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Shenemar. Okay, this is in the last word in the second line in that Mishnah on Chav Gimel Amin Beis. Don't lose the place here on Chav Dalet Amin Aleph. And the Mishnah says, it says in the Pasuk, Asher Tista Isha Tachas Isha. Now, the second word, Isha, is totally superfluous. And we're going to assume that the second word, Isha, is coming to, shall I say, strengthen the first Isha. Isha means his wife. And again, the Torah says his wife. Why does the Torah have to say his wife twice? And the answer is, the Torah is emphasizing that she is his wife, meaning the Ishus, the Isha. Isha is the noun, Ishus is the adjective. And the Ishus in that relationship is a full-fledged Ishus. Prat to the exclusion of Arusa v'Shomeres Yavam, where the Ishus is not fully matured yet. It's an immature Ishus. It's like a woman who's in her sixth-month pregnancy. Right? The pregnancy is incomplete at this point. She's not yet ready to give birth. The Ishus is only a certain... If you start with zero and you end with 100, it's somewhere in the line in the middle, or towards, probably closer towards 100, but it's not yet 100. So the Torah went out of its way to add this extra word, Isha, to tell us that she has to be a full-fledged Isha. And the exclusion here is the cases of Arusa and Shomeres Yavam. These are the two cases that have been excluded. Okay, so let's start the Gemara. The Gemara says the following. Our Mishnah tells us about these two women that lo shosos. That means they don't drink the Mei Mararim. So the Gemara says that apparently the process of sota was very well on its way. It was very well developed. It just didn't reach its culmination. What's the culmination of sota? What's the last ritual in the whole series of events that happened?
The drinking,
correct? So the drinking. So if the Mishnah excludes these two ladies, these two categories from drinking, it applies to every other part and parcel, every segment of the development of this ritual was applicable. She's only excluded from drinking. And that means ha kinui makanila, that the kinui itself is effective, meaning that he can give her a warning even though she will not drink. So if I ask you the following question, if he warns her and then she violates, so what din, in what context was this kinui relevant?
Yeah.
What's your answer? Because again, keep in mind, there are three dinim of a sota. One din of a sota is that she's not allowed to resume her relationship with her husband until she proves herself innocent. The second din is that she forfeits her ksuba. And the third din is that she can prove herself innocent by drinking from the mei merarim. But that's only the third halacha. Kinui is relevant to all three halachas. Why? When he warns her, if she violates the warning, number one, she's asura olav, she can no longer
drink.
No, asura olav. I'm sorry if I'm using the Hebrew. Should I translate every word into English? She is prohibited to him, right? She can no longer have an intimate relationship with him. He's going to have to divorce her. Number two, she forfeits her ksuba. Number three, she can prove her innocence when she drinks the mei merarim. In these two cases of an arusa and a shomeres yavam, the Mishnah excludes the last piece of the puzzle, meaning shesia, that she doesn't drink from the mei merarim. But as far as the first two elements in the equation, meaning that as a result of the kinui, she becomes asura olav, she can no longer have an intimacy, he's going to have to divorce her. Number two, that she loses and she forfeits her ksuba, those two would apply. And the Gemara asks, mina hani mili, which is a classic way of asking, what is the biblical source for this conclusion? In other words, there must be, to some extent, an inclusion. Inclusion meaning that these two ladies, the Arusa and the Shomer Siyavim, are included in the parish of Sota, at least as far as Kini and Stir are concerned, which means that generates an Isol Abayla. She can't live with her husband. Number two, she loses Aksuba. And yet, we're excluding her from Shesia, from the third element in the parasha. That means drinking for the Mei Merarim. Minani Mili, what's the source for that? And the Gemara answers, Tanu Rabbanan, I'll quote to you a Braisa. And the Braisa analyzes the opening line in the parasha of Sota. So if anyone has a Chumash, you know, that would be very helpful to open up the Chumash here to Parashas Naso. And this is the fifth chapter of Bamidbar. And the Torah opens up the parasha by saying, Vayomer Daber al Bnei Yisrael v'yamarta. Now, what is Daber al Bnei Yisrael v'yamarta? There's an extra word here, v'yamarta. Whenever you see the word v'yamarta, which literally translates, and you shall transmit to them, that phrase is redundant, okay? And you have to derive something from that. So if we had a Torah Tamima, he would be the expert on this. Have you ever heard of the Torah Tamima?
Yeah.
That's one of the most outstanding commentaries on the Chumash. I remember getting it as a bar mitzvah present, and it's a great bar mitzvah present.
Tomorrow.
The trouble is that if you buy that gift as a bar mitzvah, chances are the bar mitzvah boy already has it. So I got, I think, three different copies. It's five volumes. I got it from three different people. The next worst thing to give as a gift is a challah knife. I remember one of my daughters got five different challah knives, you know, as a gift.
It's supposed to be a ballpoint pen.
Yeah, I guess a ballpoint. That's really cheap. So if the opening, thank you so much, John. The opening verse is Vaydabar Hashem al Moshe Lemar. So I'm sure if we had a Torah Tamima, you would see that he would comment on the word Lemar, that Lemar is a ribui. A ribui means an inclusion, that the extra word is coming to include something or somebody that you would have thought is not included. Lerabos, this comes to include Arusa Vishomeris Yavam. These two categories, they're included in this parasha, Likinui, right? As far as Kinui is concerned. Because in the next part of this parasha, the Torah is going to say that there's Kinui. Just one second. Daber al b'nei Yisrael v'matan ish ish ki tiste ishto molam abal. Fine. Vi ovra olav ruach kinu v'kineis ishto. So who is this ishto that he's giving a kinui to? And the answer is that since it says lemar at the beginning of this parasha, it's coming to include even a shomeris yavam and an arusa. So she's included under kinui, and the impact of kinui is that if she violates the kinui, she can no longer resume her relationship with her husband. He's going to have to divorce her. Number two, by violating this kinui, she has lost her rights to the ksuba. Now he writes here in the footnote, the warning is effective in the sense that since she disobeys the warning, she becomes prohibited to him. I would have added, and she loses her rights to the ketubah. However, she does not drink the bitter waters. And again, how do we know she doesn't drink the bitter waters? Because the Torah repeated the word isha twice. Asher tista isha tachas isha. The double language isha means she has to be fully his isha, his wife, as opposed to this incomplete marriage relationship. Okay, Rabosai, now I'm assuming you're on board. We're ready for a very challenging sugya. And this is called the machlokes, the debate between Rabbi Yonah, son of Yoshia, two tanoim. And the Gemara seems to be aware of this machlokes. We never learned this machlokes before. Umasnisin mani. Who is the author of our Mishnah? Meaning the Mishnah has to reflect one of two opinions in a debate, and one of those opinions is Rabbi Yonason. Oh, I said Rabbi Nosson? I meant to say Rabbi Yonason, sorry. So there's machlokas between Rabbi Yonason and Rabbi Yoshia. Now, what is the machlokas between Rabbi Yonason and Rabbi Yoshia? So we're going to see this recorded in a brisa. And the brisa is going to begin by presenting the shita of Rabbi Yonah's son. No, I'm sorry. We're going to start the brisa by presenting the shita of Rabbi Yoshia. Again, if you were students of mine, I would demand of you that you write this down on a ledger. But since you're not students of mine, I can't make that demand. I can only thank you for coming. See, most of my life, the Rebbe did not thank the students for coming because they had to come, whether they liked it or not. But you gentlemen are coming on a voluntary basis, so I can only say kol hakavod, right?
I can attest.
How do we say,
Rabbi, that the Lowell children? I saw George and Lila Lowell yesterday, and they said that even people who had to come to your lectures, let me tell you, have gotten a tremendous gift for life.
Oh, thank you so much. Flattery will get you everywhere. How do you say kol hakavod in Spanish? There must be a parallel phrase. No? Kol hakavod, you know, all the respect, all
great
the
honor.
Yeah. You see, you're forgetting your Spanish already. That's not good.
Translate the words, but
I'm looking for like a flavor, you know, an idiomatic flavor. David, you know how to say it in French, maybe? Kol hakavod?
No. A votre honneur.
Sounds good. You could have just cursed me out, I wouldn't know the difference. I have no idea. But anyway, kol hakavod. Yeah. So kol hakavod to you gentlemen for coming, but those who really want to go a little bit beyond kol hakavod will take out a piece of paper. I will supply you with paper if you don't have it. I will even supply you with a pen. Not this one, because this one doesn't work. But I'll give you this one. And you should write this down. We're starting with Rav Yoshia. Okay, then? And then we're going to get to Rabbi Yonason. Okay?
Yonatan.
Oh, Yonason is first? Okay.
Yeah,
I thought it was Rabbi Yoshia. Okay, we'll see. Let's go through it.
Rabbi Yonason.
Okay.
Desanya.
What's the brisa? So the brisa starts with the words Tachas Ishech,
right,
which are written in the Pasuk Yud Tes here, which here you'll see in the Chumash, it says, Vishbias Akoyim Vyomrela Isha, Lo Shachav Isha Sokim Lo Satis Tuma Tachas Ishech. That she had a Tuma, meaning an adultery relationship, Tachas Ishech. Ishech means your husband, correct? And the word Isha, as we said earlier, is a reference to Ishus, right? Ishus means the nature of the relationship between him and her. So what do we derive from this Ishech? Again, the Torah is emphasizing the relationship between him and her. And this is Rabbi Yoshi. I don't know, somebody confused me by saying that this was
Rabbi
Yonasan. This is Rabbi Yoshia. We're going to get to Rabbi Yonasan later, but hold on a second. We're talking now about Rav Yoshia, Rabbi Yoshia. Okay.
That doesn't follow.
Okay, wait, give me a minute. We'll see. Maybe you're right and I'm wrong, but let's go through it inside and we'll see what it is. Prat le'arusa. According to Rav Yoshia, the only exclusion in this parsha, based on the pasuk Tachas Ishech, is Arusa. So Arusa is excluded from drinking the Mayim Merorim, because it says in Mayim Merorim, it says Tachas Ishech, and she's not considered Ishech, because at this point she still lives in our father's house. She hasn't yet entered into Chuppah or Nesuin. Yachal, I might think, Shani Motzi Af Shomeris Yavam, that even a Shomeris Yavan is also excluded from this parsha. Talmud Lomar Ish Ish. The Torah has an extra word Ish, and that's a ribui. And that means that this ribui is coming to include Shomeris Yavan. Divrei Rabbi Yoshia. See, I didn't mislead you. This is all Rabbi Yoshia. Somebody confused me by telling me that this was Rabbi Yonasan. This is not Rabbi Yonasan. This is Rabbi Yoshia. Because Rabbi Yonasan is our Mishnah. He's the author of our Mishnah who excludes both Arusa and Shomeris Yavam. So you want to write in your notes that Rabbi Yoshia excludes Shomeris Yavam, but he includes Arusa. Arusa is included in the parsha of Sota, and that's based on the drasha of Ish Ish, which is a ribui that comes to include even the case of Shomeris Yavam. Correct? That Shomeris Yavam is included in the parsha of Sota, and she will drink from Mei Merorim. That's not our Mishnah. Our Mishnah excluded not only an Arusa, but also Shomeris Yavam. So if I ask you the following question, is the Shomeris Yavam included in the parasha of Sota as far as Shtia is concerned? And if I ask you according to Rav Yoshia, what answer would you give me?
Yes.
Rav Yoshia maintains that Shomeris Yavam is included in the parasha of drinking. Which sounds like, again, just in a general sense, which Ishus is more complete according to Rav Yoshia? The Arusa or the Shomeris Yavam?
Yeah.
Shomeris Yavam. That's a more complete issue. So again, it's not 100%, but it's on the way. You know, we'll give it a 90% grade. And therefore, she's included in what it says here, Isha. And we know this from the extra word Ish. That's Rabbi Yoshia.
Can I just ask you?
Wait, just give me 1 second, because I'm going to lose my trend. Rabbi Yonasan Omer, Tachas Ishech. Once again, we had the original exclusion from Tachas Ishech. Ishech means that it's a full-fledged marriage relationship. Prat l'shomeres Yavam. In other words, we're going to exclude a Shomeres Yavam. Well, wait a minute. If you're excluding a Shomeres Yavam, then what are you going to say about an Arusa? So the Gemara says, the Brisa continues, Otzi Shomeris Yavam. Maybe I should say that I'll exclude a Shomeris Yavam. In other words, we have this exclusion. The Torah says, Tachas Ishech, she's got to be a full-fledged marriage partner. Well, maybe we should exclude Shomeris Yavam. Maybe Shomeris Yavam is less of a full-fledged Ishus. Velo Otzi Es Arusa. But an Arusa is already almost a full, complete Ishus. It's 90% of Ishus. Talmud Lomar. Now we have to have a different drasha. Asher tiste isha tachas isha, and that was the pasuk that we quoted here in the Mishnah. Asher tiste isha tachas isha. Again, the superfluous repetition of the word isha here in this pasuk. Why repeat it again? It's excluding an arusa. That even though an arusa is pretty close to a full-fledged Ishus, but it's not mamish tachas isha. Tachas isha means she left the jurisdiction of her father and she's now in the jurisdiction of her husband. That's not true in the case of an arusa, because she still is back in her father's rishus. So again, Rabbo say, this is what we have to write down on our paper. We have to write down that according to Rav Oshia, the exclusion only applies to an arusa. She is excluded from drinking the mayim marim, but the shomeres yavam is included in the parasha of Shisia. And even though we excluded arusa, and maybe we should go a step further and exclude a shomeres yavam, but we have a ribui, an extra inclusion from the double word ish ish, and that's going to tell me that in the case of a shomeres yavam, she does drink from the mei merorim. Whereas Rabbi Yonasan would say that not only is the shomeres yavam excluded, but even the arusa is excluded. And why is the arusa excluded? Because we have another pasuk that says ashtiste isha tachas isha, to exclude the arusa. So again, nobody argues about shomeres yavam, correct? Let's start again. Nobody argues about the case of an arusa. Right? In the case of an arusa, both Rav Yoshia and Rav Yonasan agree that she is excluded from drinking from the Mayim Marim. Where is the debate? The debate is with regard to Shomeres Yavam. The logic of Rav Oshia is that we have a ribui, and that ribui is coming to include a shomeres yavam. We have an exclusion that's coming to exclude an arusa, but only an arusa, because we have an inclusion to include shomeres yavam. Comes along Rav Yonasan, and he's reflecting the shita that we saw in that Mishnah, that not only is an arusa excluded, that was never an issue, but even the shomeres yavam is excluded. And that he has from the extra word ashatista isha tachas isha. Okay, now the Gemara tries to analyze what are they arguing about. Again, the nafkamina is going to be shomeres yavam. Does she drink or does she not drink? And now the Gemara uses the word mar and mar. Mar is a pronoun that refers to one of the two opinions, and the other mar is a pronoun referring to the other opinion. So the Gemara doesn't even fill in the blanks for us. But obviously one is going to be Rav Yoshi and the other is going to be Rav Yonah, so we have to figure out which is which. Mar, according to one opinion, alimo le arusa. Arusa has a more powerful, so to speak, or a more complete, so could you imagine now making yourself like a line that goes up with a circle on the top, you know, like a thermometer or what do they have in the circus, you know, when you have to hit the thing and then you got to get the thing up to the bell, you know what I'm saying? So you imagine this line. The line starts with 0 and ends with 100. 0 is a pnuya, she's an unmarried woman. 100 is a full-fledged married woman, she's an HSC, she's an asua. Now, where do we put the arusa and where do we put the shomeres yavam? So we're going to have two diagrams in front of us. We're going to have one diagram which is authored, which reflects Rav Yonasan, and another diagram that reflects Rav Yoshia. And the Gemara says that according to Rav Yonasan, alimo le arusa, arusa is closer to being a full-fledged marriage partner than a yavam, a shomeres yavam. So again, the relationship between an arus and arusa, we'll put it on the, you know, if we put it on the scale over here, reaches, let's say, 70%, 80%. The relationship between the shomeres yavam and the yavam is only 60%, so it's less. Now, if the Torah excludes arusa, because arusa is less than a full-fledged ishus, what would you say about shomeres yavam?
Even more so.
How much more so should be excluded? Why? Because arusa is a lot closer. Again, unless you have the diagram, you won't know what I'm talking about here. But I'll try anyway to do the best I can. Arusa, according to the hashkaf, according to the perspective of Rabbi Yonasan, is that much closer to being a full-fledged marriage partner. Her ishus is almost complete. And if she's excluded because her ishus still doesn't reach 100, how much more so shomeres yavam, who's lower down on the scale, is a less complete ishus, how much more so she would be excluded if the Torah excludes anything but the full-fledged ishus. And this we derive from the pasuk, Asher isha tachas isha, the extra isha, says Rabbi Yonasan, it goes without saying that shomeres yavam would certainly be excluded. She doesn't even have that much issues like an arusa. Now the question becomes, why does Rabbi Yonasan insist that an Arusa is closer to a full-fledged Ishus than a Yavam? And he answers, the Kiddushei Didei. So let's underline these two words, Kiddushei Didei. I would interpret it the following way, that he is an active partner in creating Ishus. The Ishus didn't just fall into his lap. The day it's his. His meaning he was the active agent. He took a ring and he gave it to her and he said, Areat Mekudeshesli, you are my wife. That really creates Ishus. We're just missing, you know, that last bit, you know, of Nisuin, of taking her into the Chuppah. But we're almost there. And not only that, says Rav Yonasan, I'll prove to you how complete this Ishus is. V'soklin al yodo. Which means, if she commits adultery, then he and the Boel will be guilty of a capital crime. And we're going to give her skila. Why? Because the Makadesh married her with Kiddushin. And even though she's only an Arusa, nevertheless, I'll prove to you how far down the line she is in terms of her Ishus. Such that if she commits adultery, that's a capital crime.
And not the Yibum?
Not Yibum. Yibum would be a Chiyuv Malchus, if let's say she continued this, or maybe a Chiyuv Kares, which is again, that's a divine punishment, but it certainly is not a Misa punishment.
I could argue the other way.
Yeah, that's what I'm concerned.
I would think.
Wait a second. When you say argue the other way, I just want to make sure we're all on the same page. Again, this, one thing I'm telling you now is unquestionable. This is in the Bible itself. Okay. We don't question the Bible. Bible says that an Arusa generates a Chiyuv Skila, and a Yavam generates a Chiyuv Malchus.
Understood.
Oh, okay. Good. Just want to make sure we're all on the same
page. I
understand
punishment, and that makes sense. But on the other hand, I could say that the Yibum concept is an automatic, it's Dioraisa, and it's an automatic condition that automatically applies to her. You don't have to give her a ring.
So that
automatically, it's a Dioraisa that is it created.
Right. That's not Rabbi Yonasan. Again, right now our job is to put our minds into Rabbi Yonasan. We're going to wear his shoes and wear his glasses and get a perspective of Rabbi Yonasan. Rabbi Yonasan's perspective is the following. To create Ishus, in the full sense, you need an active agent. Now, the active agent does two things in a perfect, complete Ishus. Number one, he does Eris. And number two, he takes her into the... Everybody? Chuppah. Into the Chuppah. That's the Nisuin.
Okay, sir, can I just...
Correct? Wait just 1 second. In the case of Shomeris Yavam, there's no active Maisa or action on the part of the creator of Ishus.
And that's because it's a complete act already.
Okay, wait a minute. I'm trying to understand Rabbi Yonasan. Are you with me to try to understand Rabbi Yonasan, or are you trying to understand Rabbi Yoshi? I mean, you know, I can't operate on two. I don't know how Rabbi Myers deals with this, but I can't deal with Rabbi Yoshi when I'm trying to understand Rabbi Yonasan. Just 1 second. So let's try to, again, there's no mitzvah here to try to reject Rabbi Yonasan when the Gemara itself is trying to understand Rabbi Yonasan, and our Mishnah understands Rabbi Yonasan and accepts Rabbi Yonasan. So Rabbi Yonasan holds that when you're an active agent in creating Ishus, then that Ishus is almost complete. You have to do one more clincher. Number two, what is the violation of adultery in this case? The punishment itself is indicative of how much Ishus you violate. In other words, adultery is like an antithesis to Ishus. Mm-hmm. Says Rav Oshi, I'll prove to you that the Ishus is almost complete. Because what's the punishment if she commits adultery? It's going to be stoning. It's a capital crime. It means the Ishus is just about there. That's the argument of Rabbi Yonasan. Mm-hmm. Again, we're going to have to try to understand Rabbi Yoshi, but let's first try to understand Rabbi Yonasan. Yeah, good.
Definition of Ishus.
Ishus means the bond or the relationship that generates Isurim, requires a get, could generate Mamzerus, and generates a punishment in the case of adultery. All these are criterion of Ishus. Ishus, as I tried to explain to you last week, is a very complicated entity. It's like Gerus. You can have so many different levels of Gerus. You can have a Ger Toshav, and you can have a Ger Tzedek, and you can have an Eved Ivri, and an Eved Kanani. I mean, there are different levels of Kiddushas Yisrael. It's not black and white. You know, we say, is she pregnant or is she not pregnant? But that's not so in the case of Ishus. So there are different levels of Ishus. Remember, I gave you sort of a metaphor, a vision of a line that goes up from zero all the way to 100 until it hits the bell.
Right.
The line starts at zero, right? That's where we start the race before we shoot the gun off. Everyone's at zero. That means she's a pnuya. No marriage relationship whatsoever. And then we go step by step until finally we reach 100%. And that's after the chuppah. Now the issue is, and we want to see the perspective of Rabbi Yonasan, or in modern Hebrew, Yonatan, right? That, you know, Bibi's brother was killed in Uganda. His name was Yonatan. Everybody knows that, right? So Rabbi Yonatan has a perspective in terms of this line. Give me a word for that line. Who can give me a word? A byline? What's it called? A draw line? A something line?
Time.
In English, what's it called? A timeline? Anyway, some sort of a line which goes from 0 to 100, and he puts Shomeris Yavam somewhere towards the middle of the line, and he puts Arusa all the way towards the top of the line. Again, you could argue with him, but let's try to appreciate Rav Yonasan. I mean, the Mishnah appreciated Rav Yonasan. I think we should do the same. So he puts the Arusa almost at the tippy top. And he has two logical, compelling reasons in his mindset, which you can either accept or reject. And that is, number one, that there was an active creation of marriage. The Ishus was, you know, when we envision Ishus in the classic Ishus, it's something that the husband wants to marry the wife, she wants to be married to him, and together they form this relationship. And that's what Arusa is all about. Arusa basically has almost all the same laws as an Nesua. Very, very subtle differences between an Arusa and a Nesua. It might be Nogea to... David, you asked me about Ksuba. Again, that's a very complicated sugya in Ksubis, but let's say it's Nogea to whether or not he's allowed to... whether he's allowed to... consummate the intimacy that itself might be a Durabon, and I don't know if it's Doraisa. I'm not sure if a man has a relationship with his Arusa, whether or not he's Chayav Midoraisa for any violation. I don't know. It's very subtle to differentiate between an Arusa and a Nesua. I can only tell you that the Arusa right now is in her father's jurisdiction, and you have to know, let's say, you know, you'd have to know a lot. You know, I don't know if I don't know if I'm prepared to go through all the dinim of an Arusa and an Nesua. If anybody's interested in researching that, I would get a hold of the Encyclopedia Talmudit. That's always a good start. And he has an Erech called Arusa. But basically, an Arusa is very similar to a Nesua. I mean, the hair's breadth of differences. I mean, the proof of the pudding, says Rav Yonasan, is the fact that if she has an adultery relationship, we're talking about a capital crime, Rav Osai. That's not a half-baked Ishus. That's like pretty much a full-fledged Ishus. So that's the sheet of whom? Rav Yonah. So now we're going to move on to Rav Yoshe, and you'll explain to me Rav Yoshe. But I wanted to try to understand, get into the mindset of Rav Yonah. So, yeah.
Okay. Can you apply Ishus to Narusa?
That's what I think Rav Yonasan is saying, that basically Ishus is from 0 to 100 and Arusa is like 90% of the way there. A Shomeris Yavam, well, that's a state of being in which the Torah, so to speak, wants to continue the Zera because never this person died without children. So the Torah imposed the mitzvah of Yibum. But that's sort of like in the realm of something that's automatic, and it's a low-key kind of Ishus. It's not a full-fledged Ishus at all. Arusa is very, very close, as I said before, a hair's breadth of a distance to becoming a full-fledged Nesua Nesus Ish, with full Ishus.
And perhaps it's because an actual act took place, not an automatic condition like the Yibum. Someone, the Ish, gave a ring, like, took a specific action creating
Ishus.
The condition. Yeah.
So your classic Ishus of a marriage relationship is humanly engendered. It's created by a person, and in this case two people, two consulting adults that agreed to
right.
get married.
Right.
That's you're on your way to Ishus.
Yeah.
Not so in the case of Yavam. Yavam is like, you know, she's looking at her husband's brother, you know, and, you know, que pasa amigo, you're a very nice guy, but I don't want to be married to you. You know, saying, I'm just trying to dramatize it, but I mean to say, you know, this is all imposed from the outside. There's no will on her part to be married to him. And the Torah gave him an option to back out through Chalitza. Umar. Okay, now we're up to the other opinion. This is going to be Rav Yoshia. Alima le Shomeris Yavam. Shomeris Yavam is closer to full-fledged Ishus. And he doesn't really explain why, but he, in a sense, he just says that Erisin is further away from being full-fledged Ishus. Why? Because in the case of Erisin, we need something called Mesira L'chupa. That's not true in the case of Shomeris Yavam. In the case of Shomeris Yavam, no one could stop the Yavam if he wants to clinch this marriage and have an intimacy with her. How do you say Kfar Huchshar Karka? The road is paved for the Yavam. Does the Yavam need anyone's agreement?
No.
To complete this marriage with Yibam? No one. The Torah put the ball in his court.
He has the wife's agreement.
He doesn't even need her agreement. And not only that, I don't even know if he needs his own agreement. I know you laugh about that, but the Gemara says if he fell from a... Again, I can only tell you what the Gemara says, so don't laugh at me. You can laugh at the Gemara if you like. And the Gemara says that if he fell from a high roof, and he thought he was falling on grass or whatever, and he fell on the woman that happens to be his Yavama, then that clinches the evil. I mean, the whole situation is molded by the Torah itself. But not so in the case of Ishus. In the case of Ishus, Mechasre Mesir L'chup. Now notice I dropped the word Delo, because Delo is referring to Shomeris Yavam. And that's the minus sign. Which means it's the opposite of Arusa. What is Arusa? Arusa is inside the brackets. Mechasre Mesira L'chupa. She's lacking what's called Mesira L'chupa. Now, let's emphasize the word Mesira. I would like to see if maybe he noticed it, maybe he didn't notice it. No, he doesn't notice it.
Submitted. Being submitted.
Yeah, no, I'm saying I thought he would expand upon this as I will, but he... Somehow, you know, you never know when the art school is interested in just giving you, you know, superficial translation. Let me just read this quickly. It's an act of conscious tarusa. Alright, so I don't know. He has a footnote here. You can ayin sham if you like to look at it. Footnote number 46. But with all due respect, I'm not, I mean, who am I to question art school? But that's not the way I would learn this Gemara. This Gemara is talking about a concept called Mesira L'chupa. Mesira L'chupa is a sugya in Masechta Ksubis. I think it's in the fourth perek, if I'm not mistaken. And there the Gemara says that the father has to have an agreement to give over his daughter to chupa. And in the absence of a father, then he, the Arus, he will make the decision whether he wants to create chuppa, whether he wants to take her into the chuppa. Now, there's a gigantic controversy about whether she has to agree to go into the chuppa. There are those who say that just like she has to agree to Erisin, she has to agree to chuppa. Others say no, all he has to do is just grab her into the chuppa. But whichever way it is, certainly he has to agree to create chuppa. Now, what this introduces here, are you familiar with the term kinyan? Kuf nun yud nun. I mean, that's a heavy word. Like, that's one of the most explosive words in all of Torah, in all of halacha, in all of Shas. Kinyan.
Accusation.
Yeah, now let's understand what kinyan is. Kinyan means that two people have to agree to enter into transaction. The Yesod HaYesodis, the main fundamental principle that underlies Kinyan, is what we call Das, Dalid Ayin Tuf. Dalid Ayin Tuf means a full-fledged decision with an absolute commitment to enter into some sort of transaction. For example, there's something called a kinyan sudar. I don't know if you've ever heard of it. A kinyan sudar, which literally means with a kerchief, but it doesn't have to be a kerchief. Mm. But that is a powerful das. When a person does, I can actually enter into a kinyan sudar for a piece of real estate that's worth millions just by making a kinyan on a kerchief. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like in, I don't know if you ever heard of the Bursa, where they say Mabruk. You know, they, once you say Mabruk, it could be a deal that's worth millions. And you, no backs, there's no retracting. So in Halacha, we have something called a Kinyan Sudar. And in any event, all of Kinyanim really boil down to one thing, which is called Das. Now there is a Halacha, which is very exceptional, called Zachin Liodim Shalobafan, which means that in certain cases, I can supply Das in your, you know, as a replacement for you, because I know that if you would be here, you would certainly want das. So let's say, for example, there's a hefker or something that's ownerless would fall into your chotzer. It could be that I can supply the das for you, and you don't have to be there for the das. That's a very exceptional case. But even so, I would say you still need das, because das is what effectuates a kinyan. The Gemara now says that in the case of an arusa, the kinyan is incomplete. And I'll prove it to you, says Rav Yoshia. You need mesir l'chupa. Mesir l'chupa means that you need das. I don't know if you know if you need her das. You would certainly need her father's das if she's less than a nara. Maybe even if in the case of a nara, she's 12 years old. But even if she's older than that, you need his das to take her into the chupa. He's got to make that decision, because if it's not a full-fledged decision, the kinyan is incomplete. Says Rav Oshia, then Arusa is an incomplete kinyan. Not so in the case of Yavam. In the case of Shomeres Yavam, there's no kinyanim here. He doesn't need a kinyan. I'll prove it to you. Because there's no din of das. Mm-hmm. We don't need his das. Mm-hmm. We don't need har das. We don't need his das. If he falls off a roof, as I told you, and he has beer with her, then she's a Yavama. Mm. So basically the bia, the intimacy here, is just a, it's sort of like a condition that has to be met, but the, you know, the ishus is there, you know, it sort of lurks in the distance, you know what I'm saying, it's in the shadows, it just has to come forward with an act of intimacy, but there's no din of kinyan, there's no din of das. That's what it means, that lo michsere mesira. In the case of Yibum, we don't need a Masira. Masira means, Masira is always a paradigmic word or a term for Kinyonim. Masira is a Kinyon. If I want to give you an animal, let's say I want you to acquire ownership on my donkey, so I give you Masira, I give you the reins, and you take the reins over the donkey. That's called Masira Lekinyon. And a Masira Lekinyon requires Das. And in the case of Erisin, to complete the Kinyon, you require das. Now, what is ishus? Alan, you asked me what ishus is. I can't answer that question. What I could tell you is that ishus has two dimensions to it. One dimension is what we call iser veheter. She becomes an ishus ish. The Gemara says at the beginning of Kiddushin that the very word Kiddushin is miloshon isur, a prohibition. She's not allowed to have a relationship with any other man except for her husband. That's Kiddushin, that's isur. But there's another dimension to ishus, and that's kinyan. It's hard to describe it, because you and I would say a kinyan refers to a physical object, a piece of real estate. You could acquire ownership. But ishus is also Torah's kinyan. I don't know if you ever heard of the name Rav Gustman. Anybody here ever heard of him? Yeah. He was a great Rosh Yeshiva. He has, I mean, he's gone now, but his yeshiva is in Rechavia. It's called Netzach Yisrael, if you've heard of it. So he was a great... Yeah, it's a beautiful building. There's a fellow named Stern. I don't know how much money he put into that building, but he built up a beautiful, beautiful building. You can't miss it. It's on Rehov Ramban. Beautiful building. Now people have... They take it for Brisim and other simchas. Beautiful building. Anyway, that was Rav Gusman's yeshiva. So Rav Gusman...
What city?
In Jerusalem. On Rehov Ramban. It's from here to get there... And by foot, it would probably be 45 minutes, but by car, I mean, if there's no traffic, it's 10 minutes from here. And that was Rav Gusman's yeshiva. Rav Gusman himself, I knew him not well, but I knew him well enough to ask him questions and so forth. Rav Gusman, who was a Holocaust survivor, I mean, what he saw in front of his eyes, you and I can't even believe, his whole family wiped out in front of his eyes. But anyway, Rav Gusman has a piece about ishus. What is ishus? It's one of the most complicated, profound questions in the halachic universe. What is Ishus? And he says that there are two dimensions to Ishus. One dimension is Isur, and the other dimension is Kinyan. I'll give you an example. There's one mandiomer who says that ksuba is doraisa. Now let's take that mandiomer for a minute under advisement. If ksuba is doraisa, ksuba is about money. If you open up this week's parsha, you will see that marriage has a monetary element to it. She'era ksusa v'onosa lo sigra. Now she'er and ksus are two monetary claims that she has over him. He has monetary claims over her as well. For example, unless they make a different arrangement, if she has a job, then the money that she gets paid as wages accrues to him. Now exactly what that means, I don't know. I'm not sure if he owns the money completely, but he certainly, you know, could put the money into his bank account. And that means that certain possessions that she brings into the marriage, he's allowed to rent them out. That's called Nixay Malud, and he collects the rent. So just to make life easy for ourselves, because we're not learning Masechta Kiddushin, but this Gemara that we're learning now is the overlap between Sota and Kiddushin, is that Kiddushin is a twofold process. It has two dimensions to it. It's a hybrid of both Isur and Kinyan. And what the Gemara is pointing out is that in Hilchas Kinyanim, she's an Arusa. The Kinyan is not complete. So let's say, for example, Rabosai, let's say she would find something in the street, some object of value that doesn't have to be returned. It doesn't have a simon or whatever. If she's, for example, a young girl, it would go to her father. And if she's not a young girl, it would go to herself. But after Nisuin, after Chuppah, that money goes to the husband. The Kinyan is complete with Chuppah. Comes along Rav Oshia and he says the following. You're right. If you're analyzing Ishus from the perspective of Isur, there's no doubt that Arusa is a greater Ishus than what? Yeah. Than Shomeris Yavam. And I'll prove it to you, because that Isur is going to generate a capital punishment. And that Ishus was created by the two, the consent of the two of them. That's the Isur aspect. She agreed to become an Ishus Ish and to accept Erusin. And from now on, no adultery. Adultery would be punished by skila, by capital punishment. But says Rav Oshia, I agree with you that as far as Isur is concerned, the Isur Ishus of Arusa by far supersedes the Isur Ishus of Zikas Yibum. But if you ask me about Torah's Kinyanim are concerned, Yavam is a greater Kinyan, and I'll prove it to you, says Rav Oshia. In the case of Yavam, there's no need to clinch the Kinyan with what's called a Mesira. I don't need Das. Masha Enkein, in contrast, when it comes to Arusa, we need to clinch the Kinyan. The Kinyan is a half-baked Kinyan. All the monetary laws and rights that she has remain hers, or her father's if she's a young girl, until there is a Mesir L'Chuppah. The Mesir L'Chuppah requires Das in order to create the Kinyan, which is the second dimension of Ishus. Okay then, Rabosai. So again, there's a lot to talk about here. I'm sweating it out. This is a very profound piece of Gemara. This is not superficial at all.
The Oraisa is the equivalent of Das and Yibum, in a sense.
Thank you.
I would say
it replaces the need for Das, because it's an automatic requirement by the Oraisa.
I could say precisely the Das of the original Kiddusha, meaning the dead husband, the late husband, his das is going to create the Ishus that now will take on the form of Zika. But we no longer need Torah's Kinyanim. And if we don't need Torah's Kinyanim, then the Ishus is really very high on the totem pole. We're going to put our Arusa lower down on the totem pole. Okay then?
Got it.
If anyone's interested in learning a little Masechta Brachos, please stick around.